राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Does anyone have Prabhupada's books on that program that has a Jagannath face? Because I can't figure out how to get the Sanskrit. You know how? It seems like Sanskrit comes and Sanskrit goes. Oh, amazing. Oh, in between. Oh, wow, amazing. Jai. Prati Brata Patim Praha Mlayata Badhanena Sa Daridram Sridhamana Bhai Vipamanabhigamya Pamanabhcha Pratibhratapatim Praha Mlayata Vadanena Sa Daridram Sridhamanabhai Daridram Sidhamanambhai Vipamanabhigamya cha Pratibhrata patim praha Nayata vadanena sa Daridram sidhamana vai Dam sidhamana Vipamanabhigamya cha Nam bibigam yacha. Patim praha. Damanam bai. Ipamanam bibigam yacha. Pati vrata patim praha Nuridram sidamanam bhai Nuridram sidamanam yacha. Ladies? Praha Nayata Vadanena Cha Tridram Sidamanam Bhai Pamanam Bigam Yacha. Aha Nayata Vadanena Sa Tam Sidamanam Bhai Pamanam. Translation. This is, we're reading from the 10th canto. This is the 8th chapter. Now, wait a minute. Can I read this and record at the same time? So what, you want to set it up? Well, you don't know this phone, do you? You never use it. It's Oppo. If I go into record, am I going to lose? So we go into record, and we go back. Well, we should go here. There it is. Wow. Translation. Oh, even better. Now I have to figure out how to make the pages move. With my hand? Oh, okay. The chaste wife of the poverty-stricken Brahmana once approached him. Her face... Oh, let me read the word meanings. Pativrata, faithful to her husband. Patim, to her husband. Praha, she said. Mlayata, drying up. Badanena, with her face. Sa, she. Taridram, poor. Siddhamana, distressed. By, indeed. Vipamana, trembling. Abhigamya, approaching. Cha, and. Translation. The chaste wife of the poverty-stricken Brahmana once approached him. Her face dried up because of her distress. Trembling with fear, she spoke as follows. So this is the wife of Sudama Vipra approaching him with a special request. Purport. Wow. You have extra here. You have... Oh, wow. Amazing. Okay. According to Sridhar Swami, the chaste lady was especially unhappy because she could not obtain food to feed her husband. Further, she was fearful to approach her husband because she knew that he did not want to beg for anything other than devotion to the Supreme Lord. So we have commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti and Jiva Goswami. Wow. Amazing. So we'll read that also. Dispirited because her husband... This is from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Dispirited because her husband was unable to obtain any food. Dispirited because her husband was unable to obtain any food for her husband. I guess that means, no. Dispirited because, anyway, she was unable to obtain any food for her husband. And trembling out of fear for her husband, because it was improper to ask the Lord for anything other than devotion, she spoke to her husband. So, they didn't have any food. When I first read trembling, I thought she was trembling because she was hungry. But then when we read the purport, we see she was trembling because she was... What do you do? And she wasn't even thinking about herself, which is amazing. She wasn't thinking, I don't have any food. She was thinking, my husband doesn't. And still, she's afraid to ask him because she knows he's a pure devotee, so he doesn't want to ask Krishna. So that's why she's trembling. So this is Jiva Goswami. She was afraid of her husband because she thought it was not proper to ask the Lord for anything except devotion. But she was constantly hungry, since her husband was unable to supply necessities. Thus her face was faded. She became depressed and was trembling. So when I read this verse yesterday on the airplane, and the first thing that immediately struck me is Sudama Vipra's wife. Because nowadays, a man may be very qualified, but if he's poor, no woman will really want to marry him. And if he's not so qualified, but he has a lot of money, probably he'll get a lot of offers. Yes? Is that more or less? He's a great guy. He's gentle, kind, caring, tall, and attractive. Well, what does he do? Well, he's just a Brahmin. He just teaches, and if people give him money, he has money. And if they don't, he doesn't. Would you like to marry him? Most women would say, okay, we have two women here, what would you say? We already know what they would say. And I was thinking, recently I was in Bhubaneswar attending a wedding. I was invited to a wedding there. And I have a disciple there, and he's a doctor, young doctor, and all his friends are doctors from his school. And he said that some of his doctor friends said, you know, rather than become doctors, I think we should become gurus because we could make more money. Because the guru business is more, especially in this country, the guru business is much better than the doctor business. Because the doctors don't make much, but the gurus make a lot. Right? But here you see, Sudama is a real Brahmin. So you take somebody that we call in America the gift of the gab, one who can speak well, tell stories nicely, and then brand him, get the right turban, the right chadar, right? The right logo for his new organization, the right color posters, the right font, everything. Brand him, he can start a guru business. Yeah, is it? Right? And quite lucrative. At Sudama Vipra, how did he live? If something came to him, then he would eat. If money or food came as a result of his seva, of his service to society, then he had money. And if it didn't come, he didn't. That's Brahman. That's what it means to be Brahman. Early on, maybe around 1970, Prabhupada had just come to India. And if you've read the history of the devotees in India, basically they live like Sudama Vipra. In fact, there's a story in which a man wanted Srila Prabhupada to start a temple in Delhi. And Prabhupada spontaneously asked five devotees, Gurudas, Jamuna, Giriraj, who was then Brahmachari Swami, Banu, who was then Brahmachari Naswami, and a devotee named Gopal. He asked them to get off and start a temple in Delhi. Some of you may have heard this story. It was just spontaneous. It wasn't planned. But I just read the story 2 days ago, and I found out an interesting detail to the story. When Prabhupada asked them to get off the train, they had this much money. That's a zero, if you can't see. That's how many rupees they had in their pocket. Zero. Okay, let's go start a temple. We're going to choose five of you. And we're going to say, we want you to start another temple. And you say, where? Say, anywhere in Mumbai. You say, okay. And there is one man, he has a dharmashala, and he has two rooms for you. And you start there and you have no money. That's basically what happened. A little detail of that dharmashala was it was full of rats. And rats were climbing over the devotees' bodies. And they did it. And Prabhupada appreciated it because that's what a Brahmin's life is. A Brahmin gives. And if he gets, he gets. And what does he do when he gets? He gives. So Brahmins never really become wealthy. So you're well-branded gurus. Not that a guru can't have money. We're not saying that. But a guru who brands himself to make a living is not a Brahmin. He's a Vaishya to the core. He has to be. We have many so-called gurus in the West, and you cannot attend their, not Bhagavat Saptahas, but their courses unless you pay a good amount of money. So they're teachers, but they're not Brahmins. Those Brahmins don't work that way. Maybe some little something to pay for the event and so on. But these are very exorbitant prices. So, Sudama Vipra is an amazing personality because Krishna is his friend. So you'd think, you're a householder, you have no money, so you would think Sudama Vipra might think, okay, maybe I won't eat, but my wife, she doesn't have any food. This is, my duty is to take care of her. And my friend is Krishna. So maybe you'd think I would ask him. Prabhupada said something amazing. I don't know if you've heard this. It's one of the most amazing things I've ever heard Prabhupada say. At least it was amazing for me. He said, a devotee will never ask Krishna for anything, even if he's hungry and he has no food. He won't ask. Is that amazing? And here, now in Bhagavatam, we have that example of the very thing that Prabhupada said. You have Sudama Vipra, and he doesn't have any food, and he won't ask. Is that amazing? Inconceivable. Now, eighth canto you have, you all know the story of Gajendra. He asked. Crocodile was biting him. He didn't know what to do. Right? He asked. Krishna, save me. Right? And we all do that. When your friend is driving the vehicle and he falls asleep on the edge of the mountain road on the way to Bada, and it looks like the car is going to fall down the cliff, what do? Krishna, save me. Yes? So we all do that. Is that wrong? Well, if you're not a devotee, it's wonderful that you're thinking of God. Prabhupada said, actually, you shouldn't ask Krishna for anything. But when you need help and you can't do it yourself, who are you going to ask? You're going to ask Krishna. But I was thinking about this, and later on in this chapter, you find out something very interesting. Because you might be thinking, why, if Sudama is Krishna's friend, they're like friends from school, and Krishna's in his heart, and Krishna knows he's sitting there with nothing to eat, why doesn't Krishna just do something? It's a natural question, right? Later on in this chapter, you'll find out why. He said, because Sudama was so detached, he actually didn't want money. He wanted to practice a life of renunciation. He just didn't want it. But it was actually said to be a fault, because you shouldn't be detached or attached. And he was detached in a way where he wasn't attached to something he could have been attached to. So he was detached from something he could have been attached to if it was okay. In other words, he wasn't neutral. I just confused you, right? Anyway, let's say that again. He wasn't neutral. He said no, I don't want money. So Krishna knew that. He just wanted to be detached. Krishna, no, I don't want any. Don't give me any. I don't want it. I don't like it. It's bad. You know? There was one Swami. His name was Satchit Ananda. He came to America. He was teaching yoga in the 60s, around Prabhupada's time. So he's quite famous. And they told Prabhupada there was a pastime of his in which they offered him money and he went like this. Put his hands up like this. Like, we don't take money. We're renounced. And Prabhupada said, if they ask us the same question, we go like this. Right, we have our hands cupped, and you can put the money there. So Prabhupada said, we're not detached like this Swami, because we can use it for Krishna. So it's, from what the Acharyas say, it seems that Sudama was actually attached to being poor. And Krishna knew that, and Krishna didn't want to give him money because he didn't want it. Interesting, isn't it? And then later on, the Acharyas say something, which is quite interesting. They said that actually he had become a little proud of his renunciation. Like, he wanted to be renounced. He didn't want money. I guess if he had money, that would kind of ruin the profile of renunciation. And you could use money for Krishna, of course. We're not against it. But they said he had a little bit of attachment. Interesting. To renunciation. In the Naradi Purana, it said that sometimes renunciates become proud of their renunciation. So it's very subtle. You can be very renounced and attached to the renunciation in a way that's not healthy, in a way that you become proud. And it's so subtle that it's possible, and this sounds funny, and it is funny, and it's not meant to be a joke, but it is a joke, that you can become so detached that you can recognize that you're detached, and then you can become proud that you're detached. Or you can become so humble and recognize that you're humble that you could become proud that you're humble. It's so subtle. I mean, it's a paradox. If you're advanced, you don't become proud of it, but it's subtle. So anyway, Sudama, he was an amazing personality in that in his purity of devotion, he wouldn't ask Krishna. If you're a brahmachari, okay, but you're a grihastha. Your wife doesn't have any food. And you're not asking Krishna. So he's showing what is pure devotion. It's amazing. Isn't it? Anyabhilashita shunyam. I won't ask. One time they asked Prabhupada, they said, Prabhupada, we're supposed to be sincere, so what does the word sincere mean? He said, pure devotion. That's all. Only for Krishna. As Prabhupada used to say, everything for Krishna, nothing for me. I only want for Krishna. So, now the next thing that came up to me that just struck me in this verse was his wife. An incredible woman. That she's not even asking him to ask Krishna for herself, but for she's concerned about him. Right? Is that amazing? Where will you find a woman like that in this world today? Very rare. It's incredible, isn't it? The level of devotion. That just struck me. And you have many such examples in Bhagavatam of incredibly qualified husbands and incredibly qualified wives. And then you have this huge problem when you read about them. You know what the problem is? There's actually a big problem if you don't read it correctly. Because when the men read this, and they look at Sudama's wife and they think, this is the standard of a wife. Right? Which, of course, you'll never find, so you'll always consider your wife or someone else's wife less than they should be, because how will you find a woman like this? It's extremely rare. Yes? But beyond that, there's a bigger problem, in that this example of Sudama's wife, it's not meant for the men. It's meant for the women. She sets the example for the women. And so when we read Bhagavatam and we see these great exalted female devotees and how they serve their husbands, then the men think, oh, that's how the women should be. And if the women aren't like that, they think they're below standard. When the women read about the great exalted men, they think that's how the men should be. Both are true, but they're focused on the wrong person, and I'll explain why. Once this man gave a workshop on household life. He was a priest, and it was for couples, and he said, don't listen with your elbows. So what is listening with your elbows? Your spouse is sitting next to you. So he made the point, when I speak about the women and the qualities the women should have, the husband will go like this. You listening? And when I speak about the qualities of the men, the wife will go like this with her elbow. Are you listening? And so he made a very good point, which I appreciated very much, that those verses about the women in the Bible or in Bhagavatam or whatever are for the women for their edification. So they understand, here's an amazing example of a wife. Can I imbibe that to some degree in my own life? And when we hear about the men, then the man thinks, here's an example of what a good husband is or a good man is. And when you crisscross it, you run into all kinds of problems, because then you demand standards from the other person that are generally far beyond what is normal or achievable for most people. And it creates all kinds of problems. Does that make sense? Maybe we could relate that to so many devotees, they obviously are looking to find a spiritual master, either a Diksha Guru or a Siksha Guru. And so often devotees are looking for, what are the qualifications? How do I know here's a real spiritual master? And you should know. I'm not saying you shouldn't. You should. Shastra says you should make sure that the spiritual master is a pure devotee. But in doing that, we often neglect to understand what are the qualifications of a disciple. We're just looking at the qualifications of a guru. Right? But what about you? You're the disciple. Once you find the pure devotee, do you have the qualifications to be accepted by him? Right? We don't always think that way. If you want to know the qualifications of a disciple, go to the Hari Bhakti Vilas. I have to warn you, once you read the qualifications, you might get quite depressed in realizing that many of them you don't have. They're very high. But you understand the point. So, but then you take it further. Srila Prabhupada talks a lot about karmis, fruitive workers, mudhas, atheists, scientists, right? Which we generally assume are them. That's they, and there's us. There's the karmis, the mudhas, the rascals, the fools, and then there's us, who are not karmis, who are not mudhas, who are not rascals and fools. Well, in about 1972 or 73, Prabhupada started speaking to Srup Damodar, who later became Srup Damodar Maharaj, and other scientists about evolution, biology, Big Bang, etc. And I happened to be in Los Angeles at that time, and we were all kind of bewildered as to why Prabhupada, every morning walk, is talking about these things. Evolution, biology, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Sunday becomes before Monday. Why? Because the sun is closer than the moon. You didn't learn that in school, did you? That the sun comes first. I was very fortunate. I didn't learn evolutionary theory in school because I didn't pay attention to my teachers. So there are advantages of daydreaming during class, your science class. But not everyone was like me. And so why was Prabhupada talking about this? And we later came to realize, because we were those mudhas, or not mudhas, but we were those persons, some of us who believed very strongly in what we learned in school and what we're being taught by scientists who want to remove God from the picture. So it wasn't always them. And so devotees were wondering, why Prabhupada's talking about this every day? And Prabhupada said, because I don't know exact words, but you believe this. And in one of the morning walks, devotee brought up a doubt, and Prabhupada just stopped and he said, it's either the Vedas or the scientists, so just decide who you're going to believe. Because they were trying to understand things logically. But Prabhupada, they say this and that, and it wasn't. It seemed that in some cases the scientists were more logical than the Vedas. And Prabhupada just said, either your faith is in the scientist or it's in the Vedas. You decide. So we're not always them, are we? We're not always us. Sometimes we're them. So it's sometimes important when you're reading Prabhupada's books to understand sometimes the them he's talking about is very much us. Or in some ways, it's us. Right? Anyway. So, now, a little word to the women. Now you've read this verse. It says, basically, you have nothing to eat. I can't imagine where you're living, probably in a shack that's falling apart. You probably have one or two saris full of holes. And all you're thinking about is how to get food for your husband. So what do we learn from that? That the wife is like a disciple, completely dedicated. Totally, 100% dedicated. So, I'm going to go back to that story. That is a story when the devotees were starting the temple in Delhi, living in a dharmashala with the rats crawling over them. Prabhupada appreciated that sacrifice. And then we got a letter from Shyamala Sundara Prabhu, who was with Prabhupada. And that letter contained several small statements that Prabhupada made that he was noting down periodically. And one of the statements Prabhupada made was, if anyone will go anywhere, not considering how he'll live, where he'll sleep, how he'll eat, to spread Krishna consciousness, I will take the dust from his feet and I will put it on my head. Prabhupada said that to his disciples. So, that was Prabhupada's mood. Now, I want to tell you a story you may have not heard. This is an amazing story I heard last year. We were talking, I was in Columbus, Ohio, and Malati was there, and in class, we must have been talking about the difficulties that Prabhupada went through. And since we're talking about not having food, something I've never experienced in my life, I don't know anybody. I didn't grow up in a country where I knew anybody who didn't have food, who that was even a thought in their mind where it would come. Because in America, they throw food away. So even if you don't have it, you can go to a grocery store and just go in the back and find it thrown away because it has little spots on it and they can't sell it. So America's, it's not something I ever experienced. But Malati told us a story, and she said that Prabhupada said, you do not realize how difficult it was for me when I first went to America. He said, one night I couldn't sleep because I had hunger pangs. The Prabhupada actually didn't have enough to eat. Did you know that? Amazing story. And you also may know that when Prabhupada came, he was prepared. He didn't know if there was any food in America. So he came with, what did he come with? Oatmeal or Jaidvaita Swami? What did Prabhupada bring? Potato starch? He brought some cereal or something. You remember? He brought something when he came. He didn't know what he could get anything to eat in America. He brought some cereal or something. So he was also coming in that mood. Maybe, I don't know how I'll eat, what there is to eat. So he's in that same mood of that dedication, right? So the wife is like the disciple. The husband is like the guru. Dedicated wife, dedicated disciple. So, when I read this story of Sudama, I was extremely impressed by Sudama's unwillingness to ask Krishna for anything. And he went all the way to see Krishna, and still he didn't have it in his heart to ask. And Krishna knew why he was there, and he knew the situation. And at that point, Krishna decided, okay, I don't want to see my friend or his family in this situation. So we're going to give him more opulence than the demigods in heaven. And so Krishna did that. And he could have done that earlier. It wasn't the time. Now I'm going to tell you one more story about opulence. It's a very interesting story. Because you know that often when people become opulent, then they become proud because they feel better than others, because they have more. So one time, this story was told to me by one of my godbrothers. that a devotee had asked Prabhupada for mercy. And Prabhupada said, he asked him, like, Prabhupada, please give me your mercy, your notion of mercy, please flood me with your mercy. And Prabhupada said, you couldn't handle the mercy. And Prabhupada made a very interesting point, this exact point. He said, if you get Krishna's mercy, then with that mercy, you become attractive because Krishna's Shakti is flowing through you. Like we say, you need Krishna's Shakti to preach. Krishna Shakti Vina Nahitara Pavartana. You don't have it, you can't preach. But sometimes Krishna's Shakti comes to you, and the result of that Krishna's Shakti is misused. And what happens? Followers come, money comes, opulence comes, because these are ornaments that come to a preacher because the preacher becomes attractive. Krishna's present within him, he becomes attractive. So Prabhupada said what he meant by saying you can't handle the mercy is that that's what would happen to you. You'd get mercy, you'd become attractive, you'd become powerful, and then the opulence would come, and then you would fall. So sometimes Krishna doesn't give opulence because the devotee doesn't know how to use it, or it'll be detrimental. And sometimes he gives it because the devotee can use it, because he's detached. And as we know, Sudama used it. So it wasn't a problem for him. It's very interesting. When Sudama came back, he saw his wife. You know, his wife's not eating, or eating very little. So you can imagine what she looked like. And when he came back, his wife looked like an apsara. She had this, or, you know, Krishna rejuvenated her. She had a Bollywood makeover, more or less, you know. And he didn't even recognize her. She was so beautiful. He couldn't even recognize her. Who's this woman? Didn't recognize her. And he came in his old, soiled dhoti and his very thin body, because if he didn't, she wouldn't recognize him. She wouldn't know who he'd come like some demigod, and she wouldn't know who he was, and she would. So at least one of them knew who the other was. And then he walked into his palace, and then when he walked into his palace, his body changed by Krishna's desire. It changed. So it shows that Krishna, you know, he can make you wealthy, he can make you poor, he can make you beautiful, he can do so many things. But a devotee is happy in any situation. And the last thing I want to say, because sometimes I feel like Sudama Vipra, because I also live like a Brahmin. And sometimes I actually do need money for my preaching. We have books to publish, we have websites to make, apps to make, we have sometimes to hire professionals to do things. And we also like prasadam, so we need some money for these things, right? And so, is it wrong to ask Krishna for money? Well, when Prabhupada was ill, we said, Prabhupada, can we pray for you? Pray for your health. And he was reluctant. But he said, you can pray, but in the prayer you have to say, Krishna, if you so desire. You have to put that in, if it's your desire. Just like we may pray to Krishna, we have this project, there's no money, there's no help, please, please, please. Is it wrong to ask for that? Well, your motive is pure. But Prabhupada taught us, you always want to add this, Krishna, if you so desire. If it's your desire, if it's your will. If it's not your will, I don't want it. I don't want to force you. I don't want to make you do this for me. So sometimes we have to pray for things. Krishna, we're in this city, we need a temple, we need devotees, please send, please help. It's not wrong, because you're doing it for the right reason. But that mood, if you so desire, if that's your desire, as a devotee is very... it contaminates the relationship. He just wants it pure. Now we have the other example of Sudama, and he's so renounced, Krishna doesn't give him anything. So we have to go beyond renunciation. We have to be willing. Krishna, if you want, I sleep in a palace. If you want, I sleep in a dharmashala with rats. But I won't be renounced from either one, if that's your desire. So I have to be open to that. And it's sometimes the biggest problem we have, and it's a real problem, is that as you advance in devotional service, people like to honor you. And devotees don't like to be honored. People bow down to you. People ask for blessings. People give you things. People look at you like you're Superman. Isn't it? And we don't like that. We'd rather be in some cave alone. Nobody to talk to us to say you're great. That would be easier, right? Or someone to say, don't worry, you're not so great. That would be easier. But people saying, you're nice, you're great, you do things well, you help me, all these things. That's difficult. It is not always conducive to devotional service. But when another person honors a devotee, it's good for them. And so we have to accept it. That's seva. Prabhupada accepted so much seva. I had the opportunity of doing Guru Puja for Prabhupada. And I could see during the Guru Puja, he was just sitting there as a duty, as a dharma, to accept service from his disciples. There was no sense that he had any desire for that at all. You could really see it was a seva for the benefit of his disciples. So sometimes we have to take things which we may personally not like and utilize in Krishna service because it's beneficial for people. Sometimes in a palace, sometimes in a dharmashala. And somehow or other we have to be equal poised in either situation. So that's ultimately where this story is going. And so Sudama then, he took the wealth and he was okay. He knew that Krishna gave it and he appreciated it. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So we stop. Are there questions or what do we do? Or both? Or what time is class end? 8:15. Okay, so any questions or comments or doubts or arguments? Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Yes, Hari Bol.
You said Sudama Brahman didn't ask for money to Krishna, even to feed her wife. I mean, if not for himself, because his wife was also starving with him.
Yeah.
So there are two levels: his duty towards his wife, and if she's all.
Yeah, isn't it his duty? He's asking, isn't his duty to take care of your wife?
And at another level, she's also a devotee.
She's also a devotee, yes.
So he was bound to be serve her at two levels.
Yeah.
And of course,
there was a man, he was a Vaishnava, and it's time for his daughter to get married. And his wife said, find somebody for the daughter. Krishna will take care. Krishna will arrange. She was so frustrated with him. Krishna will arrange. No, you arrange. You do something. You bum. Find. No, Krishna will arrange. And somehow or other, the boy kind of showed up with the family and it was all arranged. Amazing. Then she said, well, now you have to arrange the marriage. Krishna will arrange. No, you have to arrange. He said, okay. So he went out to get money and make arrangements. And on the way going out, there was a Bhagavat Katha. And instead of making the arrangements, he had such an attraction for hearing, he just went into the Katha. And the Katha was so good, it went through the whole, next week, and the marriage actually ended. He stayed at the Katha the whole, sounds like a typical Hare Krishna husband, right? At least one who was trained as a brahmachari. Right? Once, they're trained in the brahmachari ashram, then they come out and get married. These kinds of things could happen. Right? So he's in this Katha, and he forgets about the marriage. He was so enthralled with the Katha. He had such an attraction. So then he comes back, he's thinking, I forgot the marriage. My wife's going to, I don't know, any men here? Raise your hand if you're married. Any men married? Well, if you're married and you went through this, you would be afraid to come home. Believe me. You how could you come home after that? It's better you just take sannyas, because you're going to, your wife is, you're never going to hear the end of that. for your whole life you'll never hear the end of that. You were not at our daughter's marriage. It was a mess. You didn't provide. He comes home and everyone's thanking him for arranging this, thanking him for arranging that, thanking him for arranging this. The whole marriage, everything was sent. While he was listening to the katha, Krishna arranged everything. Everything they needed, whatever you need for a wedding, it was all arranged. Krishna sent it all. So, the answer to your question is, it depends on you and it depends on your wife. The general answer is, of course, you should take care of your wife. That's your duty. But Sudama was such a pure devotee, and she was such a pure devotee, that they could live as total Brahmins. And so they both lived as Brahmins, and they accepted it as their fate. And you could see she wasn't upset. And that's how they wanted to live. And I think they would have been unhappy living any other way. Having a nice place and a lot of food and fat and happy, with a nice, you know, job, 9 to 7 job, they wouldn't have been happy. They'd rather live as Brahmins because they were Brahmins. So now, if you're married, this question can be easily answered just by asking your wife, is it okay if I just live like a Brahmin and we starve? And if there's money, I'll send it. And if there isn't, well, somehow or other, you know, pick some bhaji growing wildly around and just cook it. And if she says, yeah, that's fine, just go preach and whatever comes, comes, then you can do that. If you're a Brahmin also. And if you're a Vaishya, that situation would never happen. Because Prabhupada said, the qualification of a Vaishya is that no matter how much money they have, it's never enough. So Vaishya will always make more money. So if you're a Vaishya, you'll never have that situation. If you're a Vaishya, you have a nice place, your wife will be happy, you'll be happy, everything will be nice. Because you'll work hard, because that's your nature, to have money. But if you're a Brahmin, then Brahman's nature is to be renounced and simple. And they're not so motivated by money. They're motivated to teach. And whatever comes is a byproduct. But okay, you're a Brahmin, but you have a family, so you have to have a job and like that. Okay, so you're a Vaishya or a Shudra by day, and before 9 in the morning and after 7 at night, you're a Brahmin. You have to maintain your family. And maybe your wife's not a Brahmin, so she doesn't like the poverty shack program. And I don't assume most women like the poverty shack, eat when there's food program. Unless they're going on a diet, they might like it for a few days, but other than that, I don't think so. So, yes, you have to be practical. In Los Angeles, Prabhupada said, if you want to be, you want your wife to be happy, give her children, give her nice food, nice clothes, and nice jewelry. And then Prabhupada joked, and he said, and if you do that, you'll go to hell. You know, just what it takes to do that, you know. You'll go to hell or you'll be in hell working for the rest of your life to do that. So, then, in those days, we had apartments all around the temple. And if you went to any apartment, there was no furniture in the apartment. And Prabhupada said, my disciples are so nice, they don't even have furniture. He appreciated that renunciation. So, simplicity he appreciated. So, if your wife's simple and she's happy, yes. If she's not simple, she's not going to be happy like that, so you'll have to work very hard. Or, if you don't get married, then you don't have to worry about it all. Right? That was Prabhupada's point, you know. If you want to keep it simple, don't get married, then you don't have to worry about it. But if you're going to get married, you know, then according to the needs of your wife, that you'll have to provide. So if you're a Vaishya, she's a Vaishya, no problem. If you're a Brahmin, she's a Vaishya, big problem. She is going to go crazy, and so are you. Because you'll just be, well, whatever Krishna sends, we'll take. And she'll be, no. This is what we need. Here's the list, and you bring it. Right? So now the women are saying, should I be like Sudama's wife? Well, if you're through and through a Brahmin, you will be that way. You don't have to ask the question. And if you have to ask the question, obviously you can't be that way. We're not trained to be that way. But we want to be simple as far as possible. Is that okay? I don't know if I answered your question, but yeah, ask your wife. That's the answer to the question. Ask your wife. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, go premanandi hari hari bo. Gauranga Nityananda.